Hello and welcome to SIPFA Speaks, the podcast where we explore the latest issues in public financial management affecting people, place and the planet. I'm your host Harriet. In today's episode, we're tackling a question that's no longer about if public finance teams should use AI, but how to do it responsibly. Because AI isn't coming, it's already here, transforming services, streamlining operations and accelerating decisions across the public sector. But as automation moves from the back office to the front line, the stakes are rising. Can we trust the systems making those decisions? And how do we ensure that transparency, accountability and public confidence keep pace with the tech? This episode asks, how can finance leaders not just adopt AI, but shape how it's governed, deployed and understood? To unpack that, I'm joined by Amanda Grant, Chief Product Officer at One Advanced, and Florence Bastos, Public Finance Advisor at SIPFA. Amanda, hi, and thank you for joining us today. Let's start with the big picture. Why is AI suddenly gaining momentum in the public sector and what's driving that acceleration?
Great to be here. I think the main thing for me is the pace of change that AI is now going through. You know, this is really the first general purpose technology since the internet, but the pace at which it's developing is astounding. And I think it's that pace which is, you know, really driving the momentum. You know, if we think about how accessible Gen AI is, ChatGPT reached 100 million users in just 2 months. I mean, that's crazy adoption that we've never kind of seen before. And the pace is just growing in terms of the innovation that's happening. So some of these models are doubling in size, in kind of appropriateness in every 6 months. So just think about how that will actually drive pace of change in organizations. And I think we all understand the productivity gains that can be made if it's done responsibly. And it's great to see that, you know, the government have published their AI playbook, which really helps tackle some of those questions around, you know, how we scale AI, who we should engage in projects, what skills we should have, and how we should understand things like transparency and responsibility of delivering AI as well.
Florence, from a finance perspective, how do you see this momentum translating into opportunities for better public value?
Thank you, Harriet. From a financial sustainability perspective, AI offers the opportunity for targeted intervention measures with real potential to reduce the crisis response to demand for public services. That in turn can increase financial stability for many organizations. So if I give the example of Maidenstone, AI-based predictive analytics helped identify people at risk of homelessness. And caseworkers then could target their intervention with those groups that have been identified by the technology. And that led to a 40% reduction in escalation of homelessness. Now, homelessness is a rising cost in local authorities, particularly in the last couple of years. And so being able to sort of bend the curve of increasing homelessness cost offers the ability for councils to better manage their finances, but also from a public value perspective, that change in the trajectory of citizens preventing deprivation has downstream impacts on education, on the outcomes of citizens, and therefore, better public value overall because citizens are healthier if prevention happens sooner, you know, in the pipeline. So from that perspective, it does offer significant opportunities to redirect resources to where it's most effective.
Amanda, we often hear big promises about AI. Can you give us a few real world examples of where AI is already delivering measurable value in public services?
Yes, I think it's great to be able to put your hands on some real examples, right? So I think when we talk about AI, though, we should not just bucket it all into Gen AI, because AI has been around for, you know, quite a long time. And there are some more traditional AI solutions like machine learning, natural language processing, which actually provide some really great solutions still and solve some problems that Gen AI can't solve. So I would just put that around it, that people need to think wider than just Gen AI when they're thinking about those AI solutions. So in terms of, you know, when we're thinking about back office, there's some very established solutions around things like AP payment processing or AP invoice processing, capturing that data automatically using AI to translate that invoice into data and get that data into your finance system. Things like fraud detection, duplicate invoice processing, these are all quite common use cases now around AI. We as an organisation, for example, use AI to schedule housing repairs and looking at things like risk management as well. Those are all quite common use cases. I think it gets quite exciting when we move more into the front end services and where we can really see those tangible outcomes on the citizens and on our society, really. And to give a couple of good examples, we process documents for GP surgeries. So they can receive up to 60 letters a day. They can be from 2 pages to 20 pages. They're all in a completely different format. Somebody actually has to read those letters and summarise them. You know, is there medication changes? Is this urgent? Does this letter need to be seen by a GP? And that's a brilliant use case for AI to actually take a 20-page unstructured document and deliver it into a structured format for a human to kind of consume that data much more easily. And the second part of that use case is applying what they call SNOMED codes, which are actually codes that GP surgeries use for funding and also tracking health population data. So how many people have heart disease, how many people have diabetes, etc. So being able to apply those codes quickly, which the AI solution can do based on the data it's receiving from the letter, again, drives efficiencies and gives, you know, time back to GPs for patient care, which is what's most important. So actually driving, you know, a better patient outcome from a real, what's quite simple, really, you know, AI use cases. I mean, there's some phenomenal efficiency gains counted out there. So if you look at the HMRC use case around driving chatbots, they're talking about something like 4,300 years of work saved. I mean, those kind of figures blow my mind when you look at, you know, AI at scale like that. But it's happening. So it's up to all of us to start thinking about how we can really embrace it.
So, Florence, beyond efficiency, where do you see AI helping solve deeper challenges in financial stewardship or planning?
And Amanda already sort of gave a nod to this. One area is in detecting and preventing fraud and error. And that comes to mind readily for myself. For context, the National Audit Office in its July 2025 report estimates that fraud and error cost the UK taxpayer between £55 and £81 billion in 2023-24 financial year alone. And the National Audit Office estimates that up to 6 billion could be recovered annually with the right mix of approach. And so AI is already starting to offer that potential to target, check, and if you like, reduce the wastage that is happening in this space. So where AI comes into play is it can provide that capacity for governments to continuously scan financial procurement and grant data to spot anomalies, flag vendors and contracts and transactions that pose a risk of fraud or waste or error. And these kinds of patterns are often too complex for traditional rule-based systems to spot. And so oversight bodies can focus their resources on investigating problematic arrangements. And that saves, you know, compliant organizations from being, if you like, audited on a regular basis. So it saves both the government in terms of spotting problems early and reducing wastage, but it also saves the population at large in that those who are compliant need not be bothered with going through audits. And we see that the government is also expanding the use in the use of AI and network analysis platforms. And what that does is it brings together disparate data points and uncovers hidden relationships between individuals, companies, transactions. These are patterns that we would ordinarily not spot just by looking at different data sets. And so being able to bring all of this together, that technology is now being used. And this year, in this parliament alone, we're expecting to recover about £100 million from the use of AI and network analysis platform. And there's that potential to take that same technology that we're already now deploying in about 300 public organizations and, you know, expand the reach of that technology to many, many more organizations, and there's that wide scope for deployment and for recovering public value.
And many people don't fully trust how AI is being used in public services. So Florence, why is it so important that people understand how decisions are made?
Public services are consequential. You know, public decisions impact lives and outcomes in many connected ways. And so there's therefore an obligation for the right people to be accountable for public decisions and outcomes. It's not just the accountability to the public, but there is also benefits internally for governments when subject matter experts understand the AI systems that they're responsible for. They can spot flaws, unintended consequences, and they can help redesign more robust and fairer systems. So that's an internal benefit for understanding how the AI systems work. Externally also, when citizens understand how decisions are being made about them, they're more likely to engage with the system in good faith and trust the outcome even when it's not in their favor. Therefore, being upfront about how the government deploys AI and the impact on citizens can foster public trust. And even after models have been deployed, it's important that there remains that clear responsibility for consequential decisions. It's crucial to have a clear path for redress when a decision is perceived to be wrong or unfair. And that is part of what will foster the public trust, is having that course of redress.
So Amanda, from a product perspective, how do you build explainability and auditability into AI tools designed for the public sector?
Yes, we're all learning this as we go a little bit at the moment, but what AI, whatever form you're deploying it, cannot be a black box. It has to have a clear path to explainability, and we have to be able to provide that transparency to our end users. Florence just mentioned this, but having SMEs who are deep in the knowledge of the jobs to be done and the outcomes is critical when you're designing an AI solution, so that you can check that you're actually delivering the right outcome by those SMEs. So we, for example, have a clinical team. I employ a GP, you know, who helps with some of those kind of checks and balances that we want to do to make sure that we're delivering the right outcome with the AI. We've got to track the accuracy of the output of the AI and models when they change. How do we know it's changing in a positive way to the outcome? We need to make sure that we're testing ahead of that, and it's not going to change the outcome for the user without us realizing something's changed in a model or something's changed in a programming prompt or an agent that's actually driving an impactful change on the customer. So actually how you test is really, really important. And I still think right now, human in the loop is quite key to a lot of the workflows. AI is helping, but not determining the full outcome. I think that brings us on to the kind of difference between agents and agentic. You know, agents perhaps still have the human in the loop, they're triggered, they've got a single job to do. Whereas when we move to full agentic, you know, making their own autonomous decisions, learning from their own outcomes, there's going to have to be a lot of really guardrails around how you build that into your product, into your platform, into your security. That's a super important part of how we design AI systems for the future. You have to have clear guardrails when you are going to deploy agentic AI.
And public bodies are rightly quite cautious about where their data goes. So Amanda, how is OneAdvance addressing data sovereignty, security and ethical use in your AI solutions?
Yeah, this is really key to us as OneAdvance, because we're a provider of some of the most critical workflows to our customers. And we really want to make sure that customer data, personally identifiable data, is safe and secure. And we can provide that secure and trusted and sovereign service to our customers where that's needed. So we're building this into the OneAdvance platform as we go, with controls and safeguards. They're critical as AI continues to move at pace. And as I said, as we move into this agentic outcome, you absolutely have to have those guardrails, because the data control is so important as we build out more and more AI solutions.
Florence, what principles should guide public sector finance leaders when weighing up the risks and rewards of AI?
I would suggest to start with what problem we're trying to solve. Rather than simply just picking what technology is available in the market, we need to be considering all the alternative solutions that robustly deliver the outcome we're after. And it's once we've determined that perhaps AI might be the right solution, we then want to consider what public value is being delivered, to be able to define that clearly. And as finance leaders, we will be at the forefront of redefining how we measure the value of AI adoption. We need to be involved at the start in determining what performance matrices need to be used to monitor that value. And so performance matrices need to reflect those principles of fairness in the outcome, accountability, and it can't just be limited to the cost savings only. We need to be able to measure those fairness aspects of it, as well as accountability. So we need to be asking the questions, have we built a measure of equitable outcomes across the different demographics, for instance? So if we go back to the example of using AI for fraud detection, could we have a disparity ratio that helps us highlight when a certain community or protected group gets flagged for audits more frequently than other groups? And can we do something to rectify that in our AI models? So it's having these principles at the heart of balancing the benefit versus the risk, I would say is important.
So Amanda, when you look ahead 3 to 5 years, what are the biggest opportunities you see for AI to transform public sector performance?
Yeah, it feels like 3 to 5 years in the world of AI is a long, long time. So a huge crystal ball moment to try and pick out things that, you know, really are going to kind of be the big opportunities. But I do think that we'll move to like super smart public services. So routine tasks being fully agentic, you know, really leveraging that agentic orchestration, multiple agents working together to solve problems. The decision making, Florence has touched on some of the things that we could really, you know, use AI enhanced decision making to do. But the data is key. The, you know, how we get to the data, how we leverage the data, how we normalize the data, that data mountain has got to be accessible in order to really make those AI decisions work. And for us as a software company, it's using AI in our kind of software development as well. So actually using agents to develop software, but things like no UI development. So being able, you know, you log into a screen and you ask it questions and off we go, and you generate your UI on the fly, and there's no learning product anymore. I mean, these kind of concepts are kind of touchable. It's not that far away. So 3 to 5 years, wow, I feel like we'll be in a very different place. But I think it does drive a certain set of skills opportunities, but also skills challenges, both for us as providers of software, but also for the, you know, public sector as a whole. How do we transition from being AI learners to being AI native? You know, what are the skills that we need to be thinking about now for our employees in 2 years' time, or 1 year's time, or 5 years' time? You know, are we building those skills up in our organization? And what are our school leavers going to need as skills and challenges? So it's a huge kind of brain hurting thing, I think, to think about too far ahead. But I think we've got to stay on the pace. I think that's the main thing for me. Now, I actually don't want to think too far ahead. I'm trying to stay on the pace of the change that we're doing, because I think things will develop that we don't even know about just yet. And we've really got to kind of be ready for that change.
And lastly, Florence, if you had one key message for a CFO just beginning to explore AI, what would it be? What's the first step towards readiness?
I would go with eat your data vegetables before your AI dessert. And what I mean by that is you want to do the unglamorous work of cleaning, structuring and contextualizing your data. Also capturing those human decisions that govern financial processes that may not yet be documented. There are so many organizational processes that are still based on institutional memory or informal workarounds. And if the AI is trained without these nuances documented or built in, it will likely lose context and result in undesired outcomes. And therefore, documenting tacit knowledge and processes can be very critical prior to adoption of AI. So that would be my key message, is to document.
Amanda and Florence, thank you both for your insight on today's episode of Sit for Speaks. Before we wrap up, just a quick reminder, Sit for M1 Advance will be sharing practical guidance on building trust in AI, navigating data governance, and preparing finance teams for future-ready decision-making in our upcoming webinar on the 29th of September. Keep an eye out for details in the show notes. For those listening, don't forget to follow us on LinkedIn and X for the latest policy updates, thought leadership, and more. Previous episodes can be found on SIPFA's website or wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be back next month. Until then, goodbye.